This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest Match Report. I'm your host Chris Hambling, and with me are Cara Skipper, Nick Gillard and Mike Scott. And today we look back at a match that was not only a trip to Bermondsey, but a trip back in time as South London Minnows Millwall reminded us all of their humanity. A poor first half and a terrible error by Jack Butland meant Palace were trailing at half time, but Michael Olise inspired a second half turnaround, which saw Palace win 2-1 without ever getting out of first gear. Hi everyone. My brain is fried. I adopted a rescue dog on Friday, and it's like having a sort of angry furry child, I believe, from what people tell me about having children. And
what, is it male or female age?
Female, six, should be seven fairly soon. But I talk about this with real passion. She has the record for most volunteers bitten at our rescue. She's a real incredible performer in that respect. She is a challenge, but a lot of fun. And
From what you've said in the past, it sounds like she's actually adopted you, Chris. I think it's that way round.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't really have a choice in the matter. She's a real character, all right. And her and the cat are getting along famously. So
Right, can you do me a favour and just wear a cricket box, because I don't want to hear some testicle related injury next week.
It's one of all number of possibilities that could come as a result of this. But it is fun. It's fun to watch a cat that is an inside cat and has been for the entire year of its of his life. Let's give him his correct pronoun. He is a cat called Bruce, and it's fun to watch him attack a fairly volatile big dog, by batting its tail. I just don't understand what's happening there and why he thinks it's a good idea repeatedly. But it is fun to watch. He's braver than I am.
So are they in turf wars at the moment then?
Yeah, there's a kind of upstairs downstairs thing going on, and not like the thing that you remember. There was a dog just then. That was fun. Cat upstairs, dog downstairs, but cat feels like the whole house is his, and just likes to push some boundaries. So good fun in my household. How about everybody else? I better start with you, Mike. How are you getting on?
Yeah, all right. Was at Millwall yesterday, and there was a fair amount of cat fighting involved there as well. Good.
Excellent stuff. Cara, you were also there. I saw the pictures with the wonderful Mike Scott. You should feel privileged, I'm sure.
Yes, no, it was an honour. it was fun. It was good. It was tense at moments, but to be fair, it was kind of, there was no real bother, I don't think. Nothing much exciting to report outside of the football for once, which is probably a good thing.
It is a good thing, and a trip to Millwall is always entertaining in many ways, and it's been a while, so I'm glad you got to experience that. And also, hi Nick, how are you doing?
Hello. Yeah, I wouldn't call it entertaining. I did meet Mike briefly in the toilets before the game, but I was going to tweet about it, but then thought that might give the homophobes some ammunition from the Millwall lot. So yeah, talk about cats indoors. Our producer Sam is her birthday tomorrow, or on the day of release of this pod. So happy birthday, Sam! But she's having a child. I'm just wondering, will it be an indoor child? She's very catty, isn't she?
I'm really looking forward to the turf wars between the baby and the cats. Will there be any tail batting going on there?
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
Well, isn't this a football pod?
Maybe, yeah. but aren't animals and other things fun?
I suppose.
Anyway, yeah, happy birthday, Sam. and I hope your child is less problematic than my dog. But she's wonderful. I'm sorry, I take it back. Right, but we will come back to your comment, Nick, because obviously I think before we talk about the game, it's really important we talk about some of the kind of backwards behaviour that went on and needs attention drawn to it. And, you know, pleasingly, you know, I think Palace fans and the club in general has shown itself to be a club that, you know, is willing to shine the light on things that aren't acceptable and the kind of racism and homophobia seen at Millwall. You know, and we'll talk about what that was like and what form it took and why people think it's acceptable and the kind of things that have been going on social media and from some quarters trying to defend it, which is insanity to me. But we'll certainly get into that, in a little while, because it's important, as I say, to shine a light on these things. But before we do, obviously some news this week. So Mike, I think you've put these together. I think the only game to talk about was the under-18s who pushed really hard but drew 0-0 with Norwich.
Yeah, it's still a really quiet week. It still feels like everyone's sort of on a break. And the ridiculous time between games. I think the under-23s is like a month. So they've got Everton this coming Monday away. But yeah, so you're right. On the down low, really, because there was much more high-profile games happening at the same time, but Saturday, same day as the Millwall game. Under-18s drew 0-0 with Norwich, which wasn't a great result because they are sitting rock bottom of the league. It was only their fourth point of the season. Palace are fourth. They're still 6 points behind Leicester. They're not too far behind, but I think they'll be disappointed with that. And then the women, their game was postponed, so the next game is away at Durham. I think it's in the cup again. Really not enough games recently for us to talk too much about it, so probably leave it there.
Indeed. Obviously beat Durham fairly recently, the women, didn't they? And but you know, they're still a very good side and above Palace, as I think you've said in our notes there. But yeah, we'll look forward to some of those games kicking off in the not too distant future, where we can talk about a lot more, because, you know, really good seasons for the 23s, the 18s and the women so far, and long may that continue. So I think we'll have to start and talk about what happened. Obviously, we know in terms of the game, 2-1 victory for Palace. I think it's fair to say, you know, first half was absolutely terrible. Second half was better for maybe 20 minutes, but it was 20 minutes of quality that we needed to win it. And other than that, it wasn't the best game of football, and we perhaps gave a little bit more time, space and impetus to Millwall than we really should have done with a team of that low quality. But whatever low quality was on the pitch, off the pitch, even more low quality. You know, I watched it at home on ITV, and I was only slightly less offended by Dean Ashton's commentary than I was the Millwall chance. But it was a pretty close run thing. It was so poor, but incredibly biased. And him and Clive Tildesley criticising Michael Olise for gesturing to the crowd after having a bottle thrown at him really, you know, was the icing on the cake of complete ignorance and wound me up something rotten. And it's everything that's wrong with what happens when a club like Millwall are allowed to sort of have this reputation, have this attitude, and not have it challenged, and everyone to say, well, it's football, it's not a sterile environment, it's Millwall are like this. It's not acceptable. You know, we took that piss out of them, not, you know, many years ago now with that banner that the HF put out, you know, which was fantastic. You know, and they're still doing it. They still haven't grown up. And you're looking in the crowd, and I think, you know, Mike, Cara, and Nick, you'll tell me this for sure, but you look around the crowd and you've got kids learning that kind of behavior from their parents. And it's frankly soul destroying that we're in 2022 and having to witness this stuff. So from the ground, you know, and Cara, Nick, actually, you put your hand up first, then Cara, you know, you've experienced different things and you would have your views on it. So Nick, let's just hear from you first.
I thought it was going to be bad, but it was fucking awful, Chris. There were babes in arms whose young mothers were teaching them how to flick the middle finger or do wanker gestures, and 8-year-olds doing it. And then men in their 60s, just at the end of the game, there was one bloke, he looked like he was doing Rupert Bear cosplay, to be fair. He was dressed so strangely. That was trying to get over the wall and come on, we'll meet you outside. But when we did get outside, we didn't actually see anybody, but we were locked in for a very, very long time. And look, Millwall, if you're going to have a lock-in, keep the bars open.
Indeed.
You'll make a bit of money.
I did see a picture of that guy you talked about being dressed as Rupert the Bear. That's a pretty good observation. But it's tragic. You know, these people have been, you know, perpetrating this attitude for a very long time. Cara?
Yeah, so it was my first ever Millwall game. Obviously, we haven't played them in a long time. And when I was younger, I was never allowed to go. With, obviously, as we've discussed before, my parents being Charlton fans. So even though they're not Palace fans, having the experience of facing off. But so I think, I don't know if it did shock me, actually. I think it was pretty much what I expected from Millwall. But I do think we have to be really careful about the way that we talk about it. And I think we have to be really careful that we don't pretend that it doesn't also happen everywhere else. And that, you know, we don't have fans that do this stuff as well, because I think the way that it does change is taking action, but it's going to have to come from us. It's going to have to come from us within our own stands, and it's going to have to come from Millwall within their own stands to deal with it. So I think we do just need to be a little bit careful of kind of thinking that, you know, we're playing Brighton on Friday and there will inevitably be Palace fans that are going to be just as homophobic as the Millwall fans that we saw yesterday. You know, we saw it at Leeds with Leeds fans, and that game was a rainbow laces game, and yet there were homophobic chants there. You know, our crowd at Palace is nowhere near as diverse as it should be, bearing in mind the kind of the population that the club is supposed to represent. So it was really bad, and Millwall should, you know, the Football Association need to do far, far, far more. Stop putting kind of slogans all over the place and using kind of marketing and branding to make themselves look good and actually take some action. And I think all the time that it's left down to clubs to take that action in terms of lifetime bans and whatever, it's not going to happen, because that's their income stream, isn't it? I think we should talk about it, and we should go into it, and we should talk about it in terms of what happened yesterday. But I do think we really need to be careful about thinking that Millwall is the kind of the only place that it happens.
No, exactly. I think, you know, and whether it's true or not, it does feel like with Millwall and some other clubs, you know, that is worn as a badge of honour almost at times, isn't it? But that, you're right, you know, we can't be holier than thou and then go to Brighton on Friday and chant a homophobic chants there. And as you say, undoubtedly that will happen. And, you know, it's a really good point that you made, and it completely stole my thunder as well. But I did at least get to say holier than thou, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
It's a good phrase.
You didn't use that phrase, so I got to use it. So thank you for that. Mike, you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, I think the main difference is I've seen people call out on the stairs in the Homesdale if somebody's singing the Brighton 3-1 song. I've seen people call it out, and people... Either people were afraid to call stuff out at Millwall, or it's such a culture that it's not called out because that is their identity. And until they change that, they're going to get, you know, we're going to get the same thing. We're going to be kettled by the police for an hour and a half. And it is quite depressing. And to be honest, puts me off going back again, just because you don't want to spend an hour and a half getting out of a toss-ass ground, do you, really? I mean... It, and it's all thoroughly preventable. the club sort of had this little sign up saying, and Cara picked it up, saying, text this number if you see hatred. It's just like, well, that's ridiculous. Well, maybe text the number if you don't see hatred. But, you know, before the game started, they told us we took it up the arse. They then chanted the usual chant to Conor Gallagher. They then told us we were all rent boys. So I also want it to be seen from people that were on, you know, on the TV and heard the boom for the knee. It was as homophobic as it was racist. And I just don't understand how anything's going to change there unless the whole club, you know, rather than their Twitter handle saying a club like no other, the club themselves need to do something. They need to start engaging in a new identity because they're playing into the hands of these fans. And yeah, they're just, there's no other club like it. There's no way you go. I mean, Brighton away can be a bit tense and then people take the piss afterwards, but it genuinely was pretty nasty there yesterday. And obviously we had to be kept in. That's just not how football should be in 2022.
No, and you know, I think Leeds are the only club I would compare it to in my experiences of going Millwall away, which I've done many, many times. And, you know, I've always felt, you know, it's not like there's an undercurrent of edge to it. You know, it's direct threat, you know, and it is to a degree, there's an element, there's a percentage of it that's sort of pantomime. But, you know, you're right. They released a message today on their social media saying something along the lines of, you know, we'll investigate in anyone found guilty of you know.
Well, I can read it directly. I've got it in front of me. Millwall have released a statement, this is from Sky Sports, confirming that they intend to launch an investigation following the match. Millwall Football Club, this is a quote directly, has a zero tolerance policy against all forms of discrimination and will investigate any incident of alleged abuse accordingly. As in the club policy, any individual found guilty of discriminatory abuse is issued with an immediate lifetime ban. Well, they're going to have, apparently in Cameroon. Yeah, exactly. In Cameroon, you can go to the games in AFCON if you've been double vaxxed. 2% of the population has been. This is going to be a similar thing.
It's just, the zero tolerance thing really, really, really gets under my skin because it is, again, like football is run by people who just use this kind of stuff as a marketing and a branding tool. And we saw it with the kind of Black Lives Matter stuff kind of really kicked off. I've lost track of my years. Was it 2020 that we had the summer of the protests and all of that kind of stuff? And, you know, there was a real feeling of hope that it kicking off as much as it did and there being so much kind of public resistance across the world really would actually push some kind of change. And all we've got is like a kind of capitalist response in let's put Black Lives Matter on everything, but let's not take any actual action. So let's all sit there and watch Michael Olise get abused. And then, like you said, Chris, when he then responds in, he didn't do anything apart from wave at them. Like, didn't tell them to fuck off like he could have done. He didn't stop and refuse to play until they were dealt with, which he could have done. All he did was wave at them. And then you get the commentators saying, oh, that's not very advisable. What do you want the kid to do? He's a 19-year-old kid that's having to hear God knows what that we didn't have to hear, get bottles thrown at him, all of that kind of stuff. And then you get Millwall coming out saying they've got a zero tolerance policy. It's absolutely ridiculous.
When in the 80s, I lived in Bracknell and nobody supported Reading when I lived there because they were so pants. So everybody had their favourite sort of first division or second division team and all the knobby wankers supported Millwall. That's all I can say. And it hasn't changed since. It's still, you know, we're going to label games too much. Let's talk about the game. But it's, they need to, I don't know what they can do, but stop people going to the games for a season. I don't know what else you can do. I really don't.
No, exactly. Just ultimately, it's you know, as Cara was saying, it's about action, isn't it? And that's, but you know, we have that caveat in all of this that we must, you know, not lose sight of how much work we still have to do as a club. You know, we've come a long, long way, I think, because you know, when I first started going to every game, which isn't really that long ago, you know, which you know, I know many of you are going to a lot more games than I am at the moment for good reason, but it's, you know, it's still frustrating for me not to get to as many games as I want to. But anyway, seeing the constant sort of incessant amount of abuse and the culture of abuse, you know, that it's okay in an environment that's football, because, you know, it's a working class game, it's you know, it's this, it's that, you know, that it's okay to do these things. It's okay to hate people for, you know, their sexuality. It's okay to hate people for, you know, their ethnicity. It's okay to hate on people for, you know, disabilities and things like that, stuff like that. You know, the things that get said, you just think, you know, you wouldn't do that in any other environment. And if you did, it wouldn't be long before someone, you know, before there were consequences to it. So it just seems so odd to me.
Just jump in really, really quickly. One thing that I think we as Palace need to really look at ourselves very hard and take some action as well is still the huge amount of misogyny that goes on in the stands. And you know, it is obviously brilliant that so much progress has happened in terms of not hearing as much racism and not being as homophobic as other clubs. It's not good enough, but the amount of misogyny that is completely accepted in the stands that I listen to every week without anybody around me really blinking an eye, and it always having to be on like the women that are hearing it to call it out rather than anybody else. Like, if as Palace fans on Twitter or whatever else, we're going to sit there and say, oh, Millwall need to do this and Leeds need to do this and blah, 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 you know, we don't ever talk about how much work we have to do to actually make it a safe place for women to come and be allowed to be fans of their own club.
Yeah, no, it's a very, very good point. You know, as I say, the list is almost endless, isn't it? You know, in terms of the things that do need sorted out. But it's just, you know, to me, I you know, absolutely right. I'm glad you added that to it. You know, but there's so much work to do to align the attitudes in football with societal attitudes, which are, you know, still need a considerable upgrade. So it's, you know, it's a real shame. And I know this game has obviously brought it to our focus. And, you know, I'll just end by saying one of the things that I saw come back was Millwall fans saying, you know, similarly to what we've talked about, you should get your own house in order to a point, which is fine and absolutely true. But to compare the chucking of a flare to racism and homophobia, you know, it's apples and oranges or worse, you know?
Yeah, so Stephen Barton had written in and said, is it worse to throw a drink bottle or a lit flare on the field of play? And are either of these actions acceptable? There's a reason that I posted a video up yesterday. They were shouting no noise from the Ultra Boys when we were 1-0 down, went 2-1 up, and then we were shouting back no noise from the racist boys. And those bottles were thrown because there was a black player that scored a goal. The flares, to be honest, was quite enjoying it. There's not a racist element attached. Yes, you're not allowed to get them in, but if they've managed to smuggle them in and they haven't done their job at the door, I just don't think it's the same thing. I can't. I wouldn't have any problem with an away team lighting a flare at Palace.
No, look, those things happen. They're not supposed to happen. They do. You'll have your opinions on it, and you know, and that's that, really. But you know, they say it's not the same subject, and it was distressing to see. I know you know, there's a degree of protect your own and all this kind of stuff and tribalism, but to see people, their response to be, okay, well, my fellow supporters are being racist and homophobic. They're, you know, booing, taking the knee. They're calling Conor Gallagher this. They're calling the Palace fans that. Okay, but they threw a flare, so that's somehow okay. You know, it's very odd behaviour. Anyway, shall we? I think we've said our part. And you know, if you do have any issues with what we say or you want anything to add, obviously you can get in touch with us, even though we don't have, you know, live interaction with the show on the podcasts. You can still send us an email, hi@backofthenest.com. If you wanted to raise any points from anything that we've discussed today, you know, it's a topic that I'm sure we'll come back to. Nick, I think you've got a quote that you wanted to kind of end this with.
Yeah, Leif Anderson's forehead. Hello, Mr. 50p head, Leif. Just tweeted in and said, did we just travel back to the 80s? in a Spider-Man-like multiverse yesterday. What strange, moronic bunch of bellends.
I mean, first of all,
that's careful to with that last line.
No spoilers, yeah, Lee Anderson's forehead. Come on now.
Honestly, some of us are high risk and can't go to a cinema and are waiting for it to come on Disney Plus. Thank you. Jeez, honestly, I haven't even seen Eternals yet. Right, anyway, let's move swiftly on, okay? Let's talk about the match. There's not a tremendous amount to talk about in terms of you know, really the details of the game. It was one of our poorest performances of the season overall, I felt, although statistically I think we did better than I thought we did. But, you know, it's a really strong lineup. And you know, going to the game, you know, Mike, Nick, Carr, you go into the game, you're looking at Elisa has started, you know, Eze has started, Gallagher has started. Okay, we don't have Wilf to add to that, but we had, you know, Mateta up top, you know, in a midfield of Hughes and Schlupp with Gallagher. You know, it was a strong side. Obviously, the change in goal, which I dare say we'll talk about. But, I mean, first and foremost, you know, and I'll start with you, Nick. Were you surprised at the strength? Or, I guess, you know, given the importance of beating Millwall, were you happy about it? I dare say you were.
No, I'm not surprised at the strength because before the game and through the week, Vieira's been saying how much he values the cup competition and how much he wants to win silverware with Palace because we haven't really won it before and wants to do it for the fans. The fact is, it was his opportunity to get players in and playing whilst our so-called elite players are out in the AFCON. So, no surprises at all. And it was good to see a couple of under-23s on the bench. I know we mentioned earlier they hadn't played for ages, so that's good for them to get that experience. But no, if we want to progress, we've got to put the team out there.
Yeah, absolutely right. But so in terms of what Nick said there, and I'll ask you this, Cara, of the players that were missing, who do you think we missed most?
Oh, I don't know if we... Well, this might be unpopular, but I don't know if we did miss any individual player most. I think what we missed in the first half is that we tried to play a very, very different way than what Patrick Vieira's Palace has been playing this season. And I think that just kind of nobody really had confidence in what they were doing or really knew what they were doing. And we looked kind of slow as a result of it. So I think when you look at how the game went, when we picked up the pace and we had that spell of playing really well, we hadn't made any subs at that point, I don't think. So that kind of spell of play that we had, that was our best spell of play, we had with the same people that we, the same 11 that we started with. So I'm going to controversially say, I'm not sure we did massively miss, well, apart from Gator maybe, you know, obviously, but kind of outfield players, I don't think there was kind of a standout one player that we missed. I think it was just the way that we were attempting to play in the first half just did not work at all.
I think it's a fair point. You know, there were definitely issues with the system, but I think it was more a case of the kind of should we say the execution from the players. I think when you look at the, you know, the central midfield in the first half, you know, Gallagher was, you know, all action, all energy as you expect, but you know, Hughes was a little out of sorts, I felt, certainly in the first half, struggled to get on the ball. And I thought Jeffrey Schlupp was completely lost in there, and he picked up an early booking, which was ridiculous, quite frankly. There's no way he should have been booked. But I think, you know, once that kind of fragility crept into the centre of midfield, they neither screened nor joined the attack. There was it kind of did a nothing, and it left Eze and Elise completely out of the game. But you know, it was actually them that changed it. You know, those two had to actually, you know, react to what was going on. You know, Eze needed to come central and did in the second half. And Elise just needed to put some energy and he put some directness into his boots. And that's what he did in the second half as well. That's what I felt. But I have to say, first half, I thought we missed Jordan Ayew. But anyway, Mike, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, and you've got to assume that the halftime team talk was akin to like Montgomery at El Alamein, because it was wholly different. But yeah, I just wanted to bring a couple of comments from people that wrote in. So Tom Rado, so he asked, do we feel Hughes and Gallagher work well together in central midfield, or are they too similar? And then if we're covering Mateta, this is from Vinny, I believe. Once again, Mateta took his goal well, but is he too slow? He can't get across the pitch quick enough for me. I was going to bring up the pace of Mitchell as well, because their number two did him a couple of times. But yeah, maybe cover the midfield first.
Yeah, I think in that... So I don't really agree that Gallagher and Hughes are similar players, although I think Hughes is probably better technically than I realised.
Tired of ads intruding into your favourite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
But I think it's what's the role they're being asked to play, really. You know, I think when Gallagher's not there, you know, Hughes is probably asked to play a slightly different role than when Gallagher is there. But Hughes, to me, is more of a, you know, someone who wants to control a bit of the tempo of a game, get his foot on the ball, play some decent, you know, accurate short passes, and keep us moving and dig in a little bit. Whereas Gallagher just wants to do absolutely everything. So, but I get the point Tom's making there, but I think they work really well together. I think the question is about the third player. You know, for me, Jeff's never a central midfielder. Love Jeffrey Schlupp, great player, loads to add. And you know, for 10, 15 minutes here and there, filling in as a CM, you know, coming off the bench or something, no problem. But not a starting central midfielder for me, because, you know, too much of the game passes him by in key moments. So that's what I think about that. So I think with Kouyaté or MacArthur, I think, you know, certainly that is a better midfield three. Carl, you were going to answer and then you've given up because I talked for too long. But was it along those lines?
That's fine, yeah. No, I just wanted to highlight, I think, like, when we look at, especially Eze and Elise, like the difference it made, and I think this does come into the Hughes-Gallagher comment as well, is the space, right? Like, all four of those players rely on having space and being able to create space. In the first half, that didn't happen. And that's why I was really confused, because Millwall didn't do anything that any of us wouldn't have expected them to. They could just sit quite still, really, and just close that space, and that stopped us from playing. I think the Gallagher... Hughes comment has maybe come from that first half, where because we just didn't have a midfield, we didn't have space to create anything. So it looked like they were always kind of on top of each other. But again, I think that's because the system just wasn't working. When that system switched in the second half and all of a sudden we were playing through that midfield a lot more, the space is there, and all of a sudden those four key players were playing in the way that we wanted to see them play. So yeah, I think that would be my answer to that Gallagher-Hughes thing. I think it's just that they will fall on top of each other and look like they're trying to do the same job if we don't play in a system that gives them the space to do what they need to do.
Yeah, just a couple of things to pick up on. What we've got to realise is, A, it was Millwall's Cup final. Now, if you look at the results on Sunday, lower league teams have gone ahead in all the games. They're giving that little extra bit of effort. So you're going to have that to face against. Mike mentioned Vieira ranting and raving. I think it was Mitchell, actually, who said on the Palace website that Vieira was actually very, very calm at halftime and just explained the tactical changes that he wanted to make, which obviously worked immediately. And Mike also mentioned Mateta taking his goal well but too slow. I did think that as well. But then you look at him scoring the goals, it reminds me a little bit of Darren Ambrose, who never used to do anything in games except score goals at important moments. I mean, can you remember Ambrose doing anything good other than scoring?
No.
And adding to the game?
No.
And I mean, that's what he's there for.
Yeah, exactly.
He knows where the goal is. Yeah. That's what you want.
No, he's a decent passer, but I know what you mean. You know, he would be missing for long periods of games and then pop up with an absolute screamer or, you know, just a wonderful moment of magic. And that's what he was there to do. He was the luxury player and all that kind of stuff. So I get what you mean. But, you know, with Mateta, I think the The thing with Mateta, and I actually like this about him, is that I think he just wants to. He's basically like the kid who goal hanged at five aside, right? You know, he'd score five in a game and do absolutely fudge all else. Because he'd be like, "What are you doing up there?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm the striker, mate. I just stay up here." And that's what he does to a point.
That's pretty much what he said in his post-match interview as well. I think, with the slight language barrier, but every question he was asked about the goal, he just kind of said, "Yeah, I did my job." He was like, seemed a bit baffled that anyone would be surprised that he just kind of waited and got his goal.
Yeah, but that's what I say. I love it because sometimes you're watching and you think, "Oh, why have we crossed the ball in there?" And we don't actually have anyone standing in there waiting for it. You know, everyone's taking up clever angles or looking for a cutback, and he's just like, "No, I'm going to go and stand in the 6-yard box in the centre of the goal. You'll find me there." You know, and that works. You know, if you think about, you know, the goal against Brighton, his first goal for us, you know, the starting in the centre of the penalty area, darting run off the inside post and a lovely finish, you know, that kind of stuff. That's you do need a player that can do that sometimes. And I think if he had a bit more about him, a bit more pace, a bit more energy and a bit more kind of, you know, was a bit more up to the speed of the Premier League and certainly needs a bit more quality in his hold-up play, I think he'd be a very, very dangerous player. And, you know, I think we've perhaps written him off as a club. We're not going to play him enough to pay the full money for him. But he's a decent player in there, I think. Mike?
The problem in the first half, or one of many problems, not least the fact that Mark Gaye seemed to be the only person who had the ball in for our team. But his hold-up play, like you just mentioned, is just not up to it when we're under the cosh. And I think we've got maybe too used to Benteke. The expectation is that all strikers can do that, and they absolutely can't. He certainly can't. But you're right; he's a proper goal hanger in the kind of respect that I was when I was about 11, and I respect him for it.
Exactly right. So look, there was a lot sort of covered there, and we've had a lot of comments in. I suppose we'll probably jump to a lot of those in a minute. But there's a few things I want to cover. First, we do have to obviously talk about the goal we conceded from Jack Butland's error. So I did, there's a lot of people on social media and even a couple of friends of mine were talking and saying things like, this is why we shouldn't muck around passing from the back, you know, let's just get it forward and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, for me, I wanted to urge a bit of caution on that and say, actually, you know, the way we have played out from the back is probably the first time it's really gone wrong for us. And it was avoidable, you know, because it's about understanding the kind of moment, if you like, that kind of the moment for Butland to do something like that or try something like that was just not that moment. You know, there were enough players closing down. It's a cup game against one of our big rivals. You know, they haven't played in a while. They are so up for that game. You just put your foot through it. That's what you do right there. So he's had an absolute mare. And, you know, I think picking a comment from Facebook from Richard Evans, who listened to the game on Five Live, and he said, yeah, Butland made a horrible mistake. But after seeing it on Match of the Day, it was obviously a bad moment and should have got rid of it. But he said, don't think it was entirely his fault. Couldn't pick it up because it was a back pass. And I suppose I'd need to watch it a few more times to see whether I agree with that assessment. But I think, you know, the back pass situation it's not surprising to a goalkeeper, you know, that he's going to need to use his feet, especially in a Patrick Vieira side playing the way we play. You know, the keepers have got to be good with their feet. And Butland ultimately made a mistake, which he's held his hands up and acknowledged. And, you know, luckily it didn't cost us. I'm not sure who was first out of Nick and Cara, so fight.
It was Nick. Nick, go first.
Yes, it was good to see a bit of good old-fashioned banging your fist on the ground after the mistake, though, which I always love to see, mainly by the opposition keeper. Look, the fact is, yes, he should have lumped it. Your friends who are complaining about us playing it out from the back too much, the whole point of that is to draw the opposition towards you so that you can get the ball to Leif Anderson, who can then make the long pinpoint pass to the player that's snuck off down the wing a little bit. That's what we're trying to do.
Did you mean to say Leif Anderson there? Because that's a very different Anderson.
Leif Anderson is probably some 70s pop idol, isn't it? Look, if I don't get a name wrong once the show, then you know I'm ill. So let's just leave it at that. But Anderson, anyway, yeah, for him to lump it out. So yeah, we can see when we do it. The moment Butland got the ball, everybody around me knew that Millwall were going to score. We knew he was in trouble from the moment he received it. So we weren't surprised. But, you know, up until the end of the second half, that's the only time that Millwall looked like they were going to score anyway. So, you know, got to give them a goal, make them feel like I've got a chance.
Yeah, all right. It was generosity. There you go. Cara?
Yeah, we're still in the Christmas giving spirit, I think. I do think, listen, he messed up. There's no way of getting around it once it was at his feet. But what today I spent probably far too long trying to give him excuses because I watched it backwards and backwards and backwards and backwards and tried to watch it from like, where did that play start? And I don't think it actually, this error didn't come from us playing out from the back. This error came from Millwall pushed us all the way to the back. It started that it was our throw-in that went forwards and then we got pushed all the way back. And I actually think our defence just didn't really know what to do. I think Anderson and Tyrone Mitchell were kind of just standing around a little bit. And if it's easy, isn't it, to watch it a million times and then like try and pick up on small little things. But it looked to me like Butland kind of looked to see if he could pass it across the goal to Joel Ward, who was, you know, that would have been great if he'd had a bit of time. But then Afobe's sprinting towards him and really, really quickly closes off that angle. And I think he's then just left with this ball at his feet that he can't pick up. He can't get it through the gap back to any of the players that are actually close to him without passing it across goal. And he just kind of panics and just tries to get a foot on it to get it away. So obviously that is a panic and it's his fault that he dealt with it like that. But I think the defence have something to answer for giving him so few options to get himself out of it by kind of giving it to him in that situation in the first place.
I want to add that he came across to us all after the game, put his hands up as an apology, and I think he got a lot of respect for that. My worry about him is slightly deeper than that game. So I'm going to quote from Twitter, Matthew Knights, cheers for getting in touch. Butland is nowhere near as good a number two. I'm terrified of Guaita injury. My worry is about his crossing. He's got the worries that I used to have with Wayne Hennessy, where if a cross came in and Millwall had more crosses than we did, he doesn't seem to come out and command his box in the way that Vicente does. And, you know, ignoring the goals against Southampton, because I'm not sure that Guaita would have saved them either. And that mistake, I think that there's other issues, and whether it's just lack of confidence at the moment or it's something else, I think there's deeper issues with Butland. So I think that was the only point when the squads were announced that people were stressed, really.
Yeah, look, he was a very highly rated keeper at one point, obviously, you know, making the England squad. You know, was a fantastic prospect at Birmingham. But yeah, he's... he's a number two at the club for a reason, I think, you know, and I don't want to be mean to the guy because I actually hold a lot of hope out that he'll rediscover the kind of talent that he showed previously. But I agree with you, Mike, there is something up there. And, you know, it's interesting to hear you describe it that way, Cara, in terms of the mistake and the kind of brain freeze. It kind of puts me in the mind of what happens to me when I go to, you know, order some food at a takeaway or something like that, and they ask me a question I haven't anticipated, and I just stand there and stare at them. That's basically what it felt like. And so I feel his pain there. But yeah, I get that. And, you know, he's not going to instill confidence. And the life of a backup keeper is a bit like that, you know. You see them every now and then, and they either come in and have a blinder and people ask why they're not the number one, or they come in and have, you know, an inauspicious kind of performance, and people go, that's why they're the backup only. So, but I think, you know, other than the mistake, he performed, you know, as required, although with a bit of better finishing from Millwall, it might have been a different story with a couple of chances they had in the second half, should we say. But, you know, it didn't matter in the end. It was frustrating. It was a mistake, but we moved on from it. We showed resilience. We changed things at half time. And, you know, let's enjoy talking about the goal. And it would have been nice to have seen it live, wouldn't it, Mike and Cara, live at the ground? See the old Elise game live at the ground.
Millwall's bars. Yeah, they didn't prep any beers of any kind. So I actually left before the end of the half, knowing that it was going to be a struggle. Only just got served before the second half started. The guy behind me paid for it just because he couldn't wait any longer. He said, I'll buy you yours if you order mine. So we were just sculling a probably 6 months old cask of Carlsberg that tasted like absolute dog shit. when we heard away, and people were like, oh God, is it 2-0? I want to stay here. And then it was, no, hold on. No, we've scored. So it was kind of delayed reaction of everyone suddenly putting their hands up in the air in the concourse. Whee! And then everyone rushed upstairs and threw their pints in the bin.
Brilliant about that, though, is that initial celebration is that everyone went to throw both of their hands up in the air, remembered how long they'd been waiting for the beer that was in their hand, and then very carefully just put one hand up in the air so that we didn't spill the pints that we'd waited an age to get.
Amazing, amazing. And there was the reason I retired from the half-time drinking when I used to drink at games, which I very rarely do now because I'm a good boy.
We needed it after that first half. And most of us were thinking, well, let's not rush back if it's going to be the same.
Yeah, no, I can't blame you. I really can't. You wouldn't have expected the Elise magic. But Nick, did you see the goal live at the game live?
I'd just like to say we did miss Chris Clark because normally he's the one that we send out on 35 minutes to get the beers in, and he's normally pretty good and doesn't mind doing that, but he's away somewhere, isn't he? Yes, it was marvellous. Just that tiny little tweak that Vieira said, he wasn't getting any joy playing infield so much, so he put him out towards the touchline. Excuse me, a bit more. And that made all the difference because he cut inside and he hit a perfect shot with his left foot, and we went absolutely doolally, and for the first time ever in a away game, because it's so steep there, I went down two or three rows. It was absolute bedlam. So I got the limbs, and I've got bruised shins and everything from it now. And just to show how good it was, a tactical kind of change, Elise did it twice more before, you know, delivering the cross for Mateta later. So Millwall couldn't learn from it. And it was just straight in. What was it, 45 seconds after kickoff?
Yeah, it was. And it was just a beautiful moment, you know, watching it at home. And obviously I got to see what you wouldn't have known at the ground, which you may have seen subsequently, that in the build-up, Mateta was fractionally offside, which makes it even more amusing to have equalised. With that situation, and like you say, he did it twice more, and then perfect cross onto Mateta's head, which we've already referenced already, but again, you've got to admire the talent and the technique from Elise. But I know we've probably had some questions in on this as well. I've already forgotten if we did, but you know, we have to look at Elise and look at that ability, and it's a really tricky one about how you manage him. You know, he's obviously a fantastic player with a tremendous amount of potential at 19. And, you know, I'd be surprised if there's many people out there that don't see that and what a steal he is for 8 million quid. But, you know, there's no denying that when he starts matches, generally speaking, he struggles. You know, it takes him a very long time to get into games. And in this particular case, he was into a game in a second half where, you know, he was playing against a team that gave him space. He was playing against a back line that in areas lacked pace and ability. And he should have been able, you know, I'm not being too harsh, in technically he should have been able to do that, you know, throughout the course of the first half, and shouldn't have needed that adjustment. You know, he should have really impacted the game earlier. And that's possibly where, you know, in terms of his development, he's just not quite there, and that's why he's able to have an impact off the bench against tiring teams, give him 20 minutes here and there. You know, and you wonder why the hell he doesn't start when he gets, you know, two goals and two assists in something like 70 minutes of actual football, and you think he's crying out to start. But it's probably not the best way to use him yet, but he's not far off.
I disagree with you slightly there, Chris. I think he's playing the way he's told to play. Like I said, we were a lot narrower in that first half, and Millwall flooded the midfield, completely flooded the midfield. What I love about Elise is, I can't describe how he does it, which is no good for a podcast, but the way he just seems to ghost past players, he's not tricks, there's no stepovers, and Eze is very similar as well. He just seems to do it with such ease. He seems to bamboozle them. Does he look in their eyes or something and kind of hypnotise them before ghosting past or what? Because he just makes it look so damn easy.
It is him and Eze, they just seem to float. Like their legs are moving, but it's not like they're taking steps. They're just floating. It is the most incredible thing to watch. And especially in a game like that, when you're playing like Millwall, where you're going to get roughed up, you're going to get all of that stuff. And they just managed, like we said, and like Nick just said, as soon as there was the space there available for them to do their thing, it's just incredible the way that they move. And it's great and it's exciting to then see that. I think going back to what you said, Chris, is that I think actually it's like big kind of kudos to Patrick Vieira for how he has managed Elise so far, because, you know, we've heard it for like week upon week upon week. As soon as we saw him come on for 10 minutes, like, oh, why isn't he starting? Why isn't he starting? And I think it'll be really interesting to see how he plays in the next match that he does start, because it felt like he learned so much from that Millwall game and grew so much within the game. Just that little bit of kind of getting rid of some of that shyness at the beginning of games, just, you know, getting a bit more resilience, getting a bit more I don't know, just a bit more strength really, I guess, and a bit more kind of resolve when it gets a little bit more difficult and there isn't that space ready. So I think let's see how he then goes on and starts the next game that he starts for, and we'll see whether or not that development is going the way that we all want it to go.
And that, right, a question then from Darren Hayes. And we'll say, as Hambo's alluded to, we've had a metric ton of comments, a lot on Elise. Thanks for all, we've read them all. Can't get them all in. But he's asked, what would the front three be for Brighton for each of you? So just three words answers from each of you.
Oh dear God, do I have to do it first? Edward's available, right? So Edward, I think, you know, for me, if you're talking about the front three, I've got to say, keep Elise in there for the right, because we haven't got Ayew. So Edward probably left, even though I prefer him in the centre, and then Benteke. That's it for me.
Yeah, Edward seems to be doing really well on the wing. But as we've said before, we prefer to be more central. Elise has got to start out there again. I prefer to see Eze more centrally, just behind the striker, with perhaps Gallagher just a little bit deeper. That's how I'd play it. Mateta in the middle, if he's still here, of course.
Guys, that was all way more than three-word answers. I'm going to go a bit different and go, do you know what? I'd like to see us start. Oh, I'm so tempted to say start Elise, Mateta and Eze again. Not because I necessarily think that's our strongest three, but I think because it gives us somewhere to go throughout the game to bring on an equally as strong, if not stronger, attack throughout the game, and just give the defence no chance to kind of get a grip of the game. So, yeah, I'd be tempted to start Eze, Mateta and Elise again.
I'd like to think that Edward would possibly go right through Dunk's legs. He can be quite vicious, so I'd probably go with him. Yeah, and there's one other question on Instagram from CPFC, H213. What happens to Ayew if Elise keeps this up? I'll answer that, if you don't mind. I really think that there's enough room for both players. It's the fact that we've not had two players for one position for such a long time. It's beautiful to see. Ayew really has been one of the best players in the last couple of months. I think he was unlucky to lose out to Hughes in the player of the month. So there's room for both of them for me.
Yeah, I would hope so, yeah. But it's all a bit of a squad game, and it's good to see. I mean, we're going to have to use it. We'd have no choice at the moment. And there's some good opportunities for players right now. But it is a massive, massive game coming up on Friday. You know, and we've got to pick the right lineup, and you know, we can't really be found wanting in any position. So, you know, with the subject we're talking about in terms of Michael Elise, let's take him and say he starts that game against Brighton, as he probably will. You know, he can't take, now whatever the reason, he can't take 45 minutes to get into the game. You know, we cannot, we're not going to get away with it, as much as, you know, neither team I have a lot of lot of respect for Brighton are a better team than Millwall. Mike, I know you've jumped in there, and obviously I'd like to at some point finish the show with one of the emails, sorry, one of the messages we've got on Facebook, but you wanted to jump in there?
Yeah, I was about to say the same. We're running a bit long. I would say that if Elise plays and he's involved in any kind of move and we end up winning the game, this week will have probably made him a Palace legend on its own. But I was going to end with the one question you put in the show, Doc, is the big question we can't really avoid any longer because he's at AFCON. Is this the first realistically workable post-Zaha Palace team?
And before we answer that, I think we should just Chris Clark, if you're listening, turn off now. He's not going to enjoy this conversation.
Oh, it is a tough one, isn't it? Because, I mean, I, you know, everyone, listeners will know that, you know, I'm not, I hero worship with Zaha. I get very, very annoyed when people talk down about him. I think it's, you know, when people criticise him as a footballer for attitude. And I think it's a very, very rocky road because I think without the commitment and desire to win, and you know, you lose a lot of the player and all those kind of things that I said before. So I don't like to talk about a post Zaha situation, but absolutely yes. You know, it's the first time I've seen a team have enough to carry enough threat to accept that Zaha's not available and to be in with a really good opportunity to win the game. You know, when Zaha didn't feature for us under, you know, the previous manager as an example, and I'm not looking for an excuse to reel that out and blame him, but in those times with the players we had available then, there just wasn't enough to worry teams. It was so easy to shut us down, you know. We had nobody to take advantage of the fact that, you know, an opportunity was available to come in and play. Nobody carries the ball like he does. No one produces the quality he does. And we were just, you know, we were just a poor, poor team without him. You know, we were relegation fodder without him. We're not that now. And that's, you know, a great place to be. And we get silence. Does that mean everybody agrees with me? I like it when that happens.
Yeah, I think the answer is yes. And I think it's exciting, not because I think Zaha's done or that he's not great, because he obviously is. But I think we've run a really, really risky situation for the last however long of just relying on him and nobody wanting to quite kind of fess up to the reality of his age and, you know, what that means for seasons going forward. So I think it's great that we've got this team that we can see as a post-Zaha team, but one that he's still got a really huge part in as well. So it's best of both worlds as far as I'm concerned.
You'd be interested to see how he reacts when he comes back, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. He's been pushed for his place. That's never happened.
Oh, absolutely right. Never.
And there is a chance that he could be back in time for the fourth round against Hartlepool at home.
But oh, yeah, bearing of course, in mind,
yeah. If Ivory Coast don't go all the way, he could be back. Yeah, I think you wanted to end on some AFCON talk, didn't you, Cara?
Oh, go on, Cara.
Yeah, if I could, I just, I don't know if people have seen the Ian Wright video, just pointing out how we have a big issue in this country of always talking down about AFCON and, you know, talking about it as if it's a big problem and a nuisance and whatever. And obviously we've had Patrick Vieira come out and been a leading voice on congratulating our players that have been selected for that competition, for, you know, what is a great achievement and a great honour for them. As AFCON does kick off tonight, I think it is, with some of the first games tomorrow. So Ghana with Jordan Ayew's obviously first game Monday, then Wilf with Ivory Coast first game Wednesday. So I just think it would be great if we just wish them the best of luck, and we obviously can't wait to have them back, but in the meantime we hope they do brilliantly.
Absolutely right. You know, I think it's a shame for the tournament that it, you know, it happens in the time that it happens, but it's just how it is, you know. It has to. So yeah, it's a shame that it doesn't get perhaps the attention it deserves. So I'll certainly be trying to, you know, keep a close eye on all the Palace players and watch as much of it as I can. So I can't wait. A really good point, thanks Cara. So there were loads more questions coming. I feel really, really bad that we haven't got to all of them, but we're trying to keep this as short as we could today. There's some really good four-word reviews as well. Obviously, you can check out our social media accounts to look at all those. Ray in Houston, for example, contributing another en français version where he said, "Garçon, c'est Millwall Suleiman." There you go. And I'm not going to translate. You can translate yourselves. There you go.
That's French for the C words, I think.
Yeah, must be. But thank you to everyone who responded to that as well. But I sort of want to finish with a combination of things. So we got a great message in from Jerry, long-time listener, regular contributor as well. So hi, Jerry. Hope you're well, and thanks for writing in. He gave us a quick summary of the game, saying he thought that it was a very poor first half was played. And he thought that in terms of the first half, Eze was the most productive and important player, a fantastic dribbler. But, you know, talked about Butland being not even sure if he's good enough to be a second keeper. But I thought it was really interesting. You know, he talked about the fact that the second half was great and talked about Mateta taking his goal really well. But I think ending on this comment, and I get grief for suggesting this, so I'm happy to read that somebody else making this point, because it leans into another question that we had. And he said, "I have concerns about our most loyal players," and he's talking about Ward specifically here. He says, "Ward is approaching the end in terms of playing regularly, and better teams will target Joel down our right, I fear. He's a model professional that is becoming too old. I love him, but would gladly attend any testimonial in his honour." But obviously, Jerry very much indicating that that's an area that might give us an answer to another question. And if I could have found the question quickly, that would have been a perfect link. But it's from Quillhype. And I said, if you could bring in one player this window, who would it be? Because, of course, we are in the January transfer window. You know, we are at this moment in time able to negotiate and sign football players. And it's weird to be in that position and not necessarily know what to do with it. So give me an answer.
Can you pronounce that name again, please? Because that was rather amusing.
No.
Quillhype.
No.
You've been done by the French earlier, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
Well, everything in French.
Sometimes you start reading something that's two words that's all one word and you're unsure where the division is. And that's what happened there, as you well know, Nick. So thank you very much. I mean, it could be. It could be Quillhype, couldn't it? You don't know. Yeah, so let's not jump to conclusions. And
sorry.
Write in with your own pronunciations of that. Anyway, so my answer to if you could bring in one player this window, who would it be? My answer to that is a decent right back. But if I could, I need to name one, don't I? Aaron Wan-Bissaka back. There you go. Panicking. I'm panicking to some degree there because I probably want to think about that a bit more. Max Ahrens from Norwich. There you go, right back. Either of those I'll be fine with. So anybody else want to take a punt at that? I'll leave it open. Shout.
I'm not sure about these Eddie Nketiah rumours, that's for sure.
Seems a weird one, doesn't it? You'd expect, obviously, that would be that the rumours would be correct that Mateta would go back and go elsewhere if that was the case, because you just feel that Nketiah's position at Arsenal is no contract because I'm not playing, not playing enough. So why would he then come to Palace without... You know, because he'd be up against Benteke, he'd be up against Zaha, who's played centrally sometimes, he'd be up against Edouard, and then Mateta as well, who's been featuring. And arguably he hasn't proved himself a better player than anyone, to be honest. So, you know, we clearly like him as a footballer, but it just seems a weird one to me. But if that's the direction we go. Nick, Cara, any thoughts on a player you lovingly bring into this squad?
I'm quite happy with what we got for the first time in a long time. You're right about the Ward position, you know, but that I think that's looking towards the end of the season, maybe somebody to cover for backup. But we've got under 23s that seem to be doing all right. Hopefully Vieira will bring some of those through. We need to look for a replacement for Gallagher if he does go or when he does go. So those are the positions I'd be looking at.
Yeah, I agree. I think this summer transfers are going to be the big ones for us, rather than particularly needing to do anything in January. But I think maybe as a humanitarian project, we should just check in with Kieran Trippier and see if he's all right after having just moved to Newcastle and been knocked out by Cambridge.
Yeah, hell of a debut. I mean, I'm not going to say that I'm not enjoying the circus at Newcastle, really. But anyway, I think it is time, sadly, to end the show. It was great to be back, I have to say. It's been a long while. Obviously, took a long break over Christmas. And but it's always worth doing to kind of refresh everything. And a lot of football got played in that time. Some good performances, some not so good performances. But great to be back. So thank you for listening to the show. And thanks in particular to everybody who got in touch. As Mike mentioned earlier, we do, of course, read them all. But, you know, those that we don't use, everything gets used to create the show. So don't worry about that. It's all well received. The preview team will, of course, be with you in midweek to look ahead to the televised trip to the team on the South Coast Friday. There's a I forget the exact name of that, but just don't remember their names. And I don't mean
the Brighton Brawlers, I believe they're called.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, Brighton Brawlers, that's it. Yeah. But anyway, so as ever, there's plenty more content for you across all of our social accounts and a wealth of live and recorded shows for you over on YouTube as well. The good work being done on there is well worth checking in. So, get involved, like, subscribe in all those relevant places. Thank you to Mike, Nick and Cara. And until next time, come on, you Palace. It's the 90th minute. All your mates are around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mate's already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.